Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, April the 9th, and we will welcome in Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson, as we do almost every week at this time, for our state capitol report, when we review the top political stories from the week before and preview the issues that will be up for debate this week at the state capitol. And as always, we welcome your questions and reactions at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. And we will welcome your reactions to news like the acquittal of state government worker Georgia Thompson last week. An appeals court threw out her conviction in that so-called Travelgate scandal. We'll talk some about that. We'll also talk some about calls for reform in light of the tone of the state Supreme Court race, which concluded, of course, last week on Election Day. And we'll also talk some about the governor's announcement of a global warming task force for Wisconsin and other issues that will be getting some hearings or some sort of legislative attention during the week. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or talk at WPR.org. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio's state government reporter. Good morning.
Morning, Joy.
So let's start with the results of the state Supreme Court justice race. On Tuesday, we had Washington County Judge Annette Ziegler defeating Madison Attorney Linda Clifford quite handily, too. What, 58% to 42%, something like that? So it was a decisive win for Annette Ziegler.
Really? No doubt as to who the victor was there.
Yeah, and what are people saying about this outcome?
I think it totally depends. Depends on what party you associate yourself with, how people are viewing this. A lot of Clifford supporters who are Democrats kind of feel like they were just outspent in this race and, that the money was the difference. They felt like they had some pretty legitimate issues against Judge Ziegler, specifically some of the alleged conflicts of interest she had involving cases with the West Bend Savings Bank, where her husband sits on the board of directors. But they felt like, we just never got a chance to make that case because we were outspent. If you're a Ziegler supporter or a Republican, I think you feel like, the people of Wisconsin spoke, and they decided that they wanted a judge in this race, which is what Judge Ziegler kept saying throughout the race. I'm the only judge who's a candidate here. And, One Republican I spoke to said that, maybe you don't need to be a judge to be on the court, and history has proven that. But in the future, it's almost like you're going to need to be, just from the campaign perspective.
And don't say I am not a judge.
unless you want it repeated 50 times in an hack ad.
Well, speaking of all of these ads, some were by the campaign, some were from outside interest groups. But there were a lot of them. Some people are saying we've got to change the way we elect judges, or we've got to do something to not have this kind of a nasty campaign and high spending campaign. What reforms are being talked about now?
Well, there's really a couple that have been proposed as it relates to Supreme Court races. One would be public financing of all Supreme Court races. There's more sweeping public financing proposals on the table, one that'll be discussed today at the Capitol, I believe. But this would, make sure that the playing field is sort of leveled. The other proposal is the forcing issue ad groups to tell who's paying for their ads. Right now, you see an ad by WMC, for example, and it says at the end, paid for by Wisconsin Manufacturers Commerce. But you don't know where WMC got their money because they're not specifically advocating for any candidate. They don't have to divulge that. So there's a proposal that the Governor Jim Doyle talked about in a State of the State address that would require these groups within 2 months of an election, if they mention a candidate, got to say who paid for it. And you have to abide by state contribution limits, too.
But in any case, maybe some action on these proposed reforms. But Annette Ziegler takes over on the court for the retiring John Wilcox on, what, August 1st?
Correct, yes.
We will talk about some other issues in state government news after we check the weather. I'm going to talk to Sean about a case that really stunned a lot of observers late last week, last Thursday. An appeals court released from prison a state government worker, Georgia Thompson. She was involved in the so-called Travelgate scandal, and we'll talk more about that after we check the weather. And we welcome your questions, your observations about state government news, including this Travelgate case, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 17 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday morning, April the 9th. This afternoon, it's At Issue with Gene Purcell, sitting in for Ben Marins. And after 5, Gene and his guest will explore the history of the alternative minimum tax and its present-day effects. That's coming up after 5 this afternoon. This is our State Capitol Report when we talk with Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson about issues making news at the state capitol or issues making news that affect state government. And one of the issues, Sean Johnson, was, as I mentioned before the break, really a stunner late last week, Thursday of last week. Georgia Thompson was ordered released from prison. And this appeals court said that the case against her was extremely weak and she shouldn't be serving time in jail.
Yeah, I think the words that one of the justices or the judges used was that the evidence was beyond thin. Mm-hmm. And it was. It was just a stunner in terms of how quickly this thing happened. You had oral arguments, I think about 26 minutes of oral arguments that day. And a few hours later, Georgia Thompson is released from prison and acquitted. So everything you heard about this case for months last year, both, you know, the buildup, the trial, all the, you know, the political attacks afterward, tossed out, basically.
Yeah. And so what happened here is we had Georgia Thompson, who was overseeing a bidding process where companies bid to gain the state's travel contract for if any state workers go travel anywhere, that this is the travel agency they would have to use.
Right.
Yeah. And so she's taking in these bids, and one of the companies is Edelman Travel in Milwaukee,
and whose executives had given $20,000 mm-hmm. to the governor, and so the allegations basically by federal prosecutors were that she awarded this contract or helped award this contract based on political considerations. And so that was really the, you know, what was at issue in this trial. And, you know, a jury agreed with prosecutors. A judge certainly sentenced her more strongly than other recent, corruption cases. She received an 18-month prison sentence and was, you know, serving 4 months of it when this case came down. So in the oral arguments, you know, it's impossible to say exactly why judges acted they released her before they even drafted a decision. But you had this exchange between Judge Diane Wood and the U.S. Attorney Greg Honstad, who is arguing the case, where Wood noted to Honstad that the donations from Edelman Travel to Governor Jim Doyle were legal and that Georgia Thompson knew nothing about them.
I have to say, at least in comparison to some of the cases this court has seen, that's a pretty thin set of facts to show some tight political relationship between Governor Doyle and the people who own Edelman Travel.
But looking just at those connections, that may be true, Your Honor.
Is there anything else? Am I missing something?
There are her statements where she says that politically this won't fly. My bosses don't want to hear it's anyone
that
other than Edelman Travel.
That doesn't say anything about what Governor Doyle and Edelman Travel are doing, though. Those are extremely general statements. Is there anything else in the record to show links between Governor Doyle and Edelman Travel other than the things I've just reviewed?
No, Your Honor. That's it.
So just a sample there. I mean, there were just repeated instances where the judges just grilled this attorney here and sort of threw softballs at Georgia Thompson's attorney. So you didn't know exactly why they decided, but they sort of tipped their hand here.
Yeah, and it's the Georgia Thompson supposedly said it won't fly if we don't award this to Edelman. She didn't say it exactly like that, but it's being that statement could be that we want a state company to win this contract, not some out-of-state company.
Right, and I mean, the judges said, you know, that some political considerations are just very vague.
Yeah.
And you know they you just didn't have any hard link there in this appeals panel mind.
Yeah. So what did this case was going on during Governor Doyle's re-election campaign and really did cast certainly a cloud over him. What did he have to say about this?
The governor came out. He held a press conference later in the day, and he was very candid and spent much of the time talking to the press. Just here are his opening remarks, I think we've got.
Can you imagine the horror of this? She's doing her job, and then she gets caught up in all of this. And not only what happened to her in court, but millions and millions of dollars were spent by my political opponents trying to make this woman appear to be a terrible criminal. You know, there's a lot of putting this thing right back in order, and it seems to me quite a few people have a responsibility to make this thing right.
And, you know, at times he singled out specific members of the press. It's just very unlike the governor to go at you like that. And, you know, whether or not that was warranted is certainly up for debate. But the governor basically saying here that I've kept my mouth shut because I had to put faith in the system, but now the system's done the right thing.
People shouldn't underestimate what an extraordinary thing the Court of Appeals did today. I've been in the criminal prosecution business a long time, and today I noticed some of your early reports suggest all they did was reverse a conviction. They went way beyond that. They directed an order of acquittal for Georgia Thompson. And I believe the Court of Appeals' order of acquittal today recognized that this conviction was a terrible injustice. Georgia Thompson is an innocent woman who was imprisoned for more than 4 months just for doing her job.
And I read that the governor said if she wants her job back, she can have it.
He also mentioned that, you know, he thinks that she should get back pay, that her court costs should be covered. Maybe the trouble with this is she's not exactly entitled to it, being a state employee who was, prosecuted by federal prosecutors, that she doesn't necessarily have all those things coming to her. And who knows if she'd want her job back.
Right. You know, word as to whether she wants her job back?
Not yet. Yeah. I mean, I haven't talked to her attorney since the day that this acquittal came down. But I think she would have other things on her mind for a few days. Who knows?
Yeah. What did her attorney have to say about all this?
I mean, her attorney said that the court's action had been, you know, extremely hard on her, that she lost her home, her good name. It means that she can be with her family again, but, you know, these other things the government can't really give back.
Yeah. And, you know, there has been some talk about how this case might be linked to or play into all of the national news about the U.S. attorneys and the political motivations of U.S. attorneys and whether the administration was firing U.S. attorneys that weren't towing the Republican Party line. What's being said about that in this particular case, Sean?
So far as far as this case goes, I mean, there's no hard evidence that shows that was indeed the case. But, I mean, this is sort of an idea that's being thrown out there, was thrown out there almost immediately by Democratic Party Chair Joe Wernicke, who, you know, basically openly questioned the U.S. attorney's motives in bringing a case against Georgia Thompson to begin with.
Well, I think anything has to be viewed with some suspicion at this point if it's being done by any U.S. attorney anywhere in the country. And I'm not trying to impugn Mr. Biskupic's motives. I don't know what they are.
So, what's next?
What's next is you'll wait for the decision in this case and see the exact legal rationale that these judges used for making their very quick decision. And that will, you know, that may have some effect on other related cases that are in the pipeline. I mean, analysis that I saw said that judges, basically are saying you're going to need a tougher case if you want to get a conviction in these types of cases.
Yeah. Well, we only have a couple of minutes left in this half hour with you, Sean. We do have a caller who wanted to talk about the Georgia Thompson case. So let me quickly bring in John in somewhere in southeastern Wisconsin. Go ahead, John.
Good morning. I think one of the things that should be noted is that when the governor said that this was extraordinary, he's right. That is not political rhetoric. The Court of Appeals action, I think, is almost unheard of. I've been doing criminal defense work for 27 years, and a couple of things I thought. One, I didn't follow the case very, very closely because I didn't have time, and it tends to be that the devil's in the details in most cases, and it's hard to judge them from the press, but I never understood how this woman could have been prosecuted. I didn't understand that she even got through an indictment, much less a trial. So, I mean, I know Steve Skubic, and he's a good guy, and he's an honorable guy, but I never understood this prosecution. And the second issue that's a little technical but maybe important is that federal courts restrict the ability of lawyers to question jurors and voir dire and determine prejudice. And I think that's why you can have verdicts in federal court like this. That this woman was prosecuted and then given an excessively harsh sentence is just a travesty. I don't know that I ever felt more sorry for somebody I didn't know and a criminal defendant in the case because, you know, they're not my clients. This was just extraordinary that it happened to her, and I hope somehow she can be compensated. I just never understood it, and Steve Hurley's a good lawyer. This was just the whole thing from start to finish, that she was charged was preposterous, that she was convicted was extraordinary, and that the system finally fixed it is rare. But I couldn't be happier for somebody I don't know.
Thank you very much, John, for your reaction to that. Sean, just a couple of minutes left. Anything further on the Georgia Thompson case? Or?
Well, I mean, the question you raised as to why this case was brought against Georgia Thompson. I mean, one thing that the Democrats were mentioning when this case first started was that this was an attempt in their mind to, you know, go after someone higher up than Georgia Thompson. And there was, you know, there was a lot of speculation about that last year, and it never happened. She never changed her story, said that, she maintained her innocence throughout, and it's paid off for her now.
Well, you know, you gave us a lot of information on a lot of hearings that are happening this week at the state capitol on various legislation. We don't have time to go through them all. However, can you sort of set the stage for us? There is going to be an informational hearing, I think on Tuesday, on global climate change, and the governor did appoint a task force on climate change late last week.
Right. The governor, this is something that he said he was going to do, I believe, in a State of the State address. And so this task force is going to look at how the state moves forward. This hearing was set before that announcement, though, because you have a couple lawmakers in Madison area who want to force the state to reduce their emission levels back to levels from last decade. That's a strongly worded proposal. We'll see if this task force goes along with something like that, given that it has a lot of utility executives on there who would maybe be in a tough spot if they had to reduce those emissions.
All right, Sean, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again next week, if not before.
Right, thanks, Joy.
Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio, state government reporter. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine at 7:36 on this Monday, April the 9th. And this is our regular weekly feature, the State Capitol Report. Every Monday in the 7 o'clock hour, we review the past week, the top political state news stories of the past week, and we preview the week ahead. One thing that's on the agenda, the legislative agenda this week, is an informational hearing on global climate change. And we will talk with two state senators about Wisconsin's efforts when it comes to legislation regarding climate change. And we welcome your questions and comments for our guest as well at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send us an email to talk@wpr.org. Talk@wpr.org. We are happy to have with us Mark Miller, who is a Democratic state senator from Madison. He chairs the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And also with us, Neil Kedzie, a Republican state senator from Elkhorn. He's a member of the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Joy.
Let me start with you, Senator Miller. As chair of this committee and as the author of a guest column that I saw in the State Journal, the Wisconsin State Journal yesterday, what is this informational hearing on global climate change all about tomorrow?
Well, Joy, global climate change is an issue that we need to address because it's very clear that scientific studies indicated that the human activity is has a direct impact on our climate, and so we need to take steps to try to reduce or reverse that trend. And so, the public hearings, and I'm planning on having a series of these. Is designed to gather the information not only in what is the impact on Wisconsin, but what steps we should undertake to try to reduce Wisconsin's impact on global climate change.
Yeah, and the first one will feature a director of UW-Madison Center for Sustainability and the Global Environment, John Foley, who will, just give your committee a climate change 101 lesson?
That's correct. John Foley is a nationally respected and known expert in global climate change. He happens to be here at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and he is in high demand, so it was difficult to schedule him. So we've scheduled him for tomorrow, and he's going to give us an overview of global climate change and more importantly, its impact on Wisconsin.
Yeah. And Senator Kedzie, I read somewhere that you while you didn't object to hearing from this speaker, you wanted to make sure that the committee heard from other speakers with differing points of view on this issue?
Well, that's correct, Joy. And, mm-hmm. and Senator Miller and I have known each other for a number of years, and I respect him and his commitment to environmental issues just as myself. But I do have to question or disagree that it's not very clear that humans are the prime driver behind any type of supposed climate change that's occurring out there. I mean, there are a number of causes of change, other than carbon dioxide, we can't rule out looking at what's happening in other parts of the world, such as the deforestation of the rainforests and burning volcanoes. A lot of different things affect climate other than potentially humans, and the verdict is far from being conclusive because many scientists totally disagree and say that there are many, many other issues that are causing any changes, and we may actually be heading toward a global cooling.
Yeah, and but you are okay with hearing this particular speaker tomorrow as long as someone perhaps with your point of view is presented later?
Totally. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we need to hear from everyone. I mean, everybody. We have very learned people that come from a variety of backgrounds and issues. And I think that this is a good stepping stone. I would hope that we do this on a continual basis to hear a wide variety of individuals to give their points of view. I'm not a scientist. Senator Miller's not a scientist. We're here to learn. And, I look forward to the upcoming hearing.
Senator Miller, what do you make of, though, that statement that it is not clear that human activity is the biggest contributor to global warming, that there is debate over this?
Well, I don't think there's any debate in the scientific community about whether or not humans are contributing to global warming. And I would welcome any, scientist who's published information to come before the committee and make that case. But I just don't think there are any. I think the only scientists that have done it have been those who have been in the direct employ of special interest. And so their science is not particularly credible. So I would look to any scientist who's published in a peer-reviewed journal so we make sure the science is accurate. Because that's what we need to have. We need to make sure that the science, when we look to science, we need to make sure that we have an unbiased science evidence before us, because that's the best basis for making a decision.
Yeah, Senator Kedzie, do you know of any scientists who, say, aren't on Exxon's payroll that don't believe that human activity is the biggest contributor to the global warming?
Sure. UW-Madison Professor Dr. Reed, who is one of the founding directors of the Nelson Environmental Institute, has long questioned the conventional wisdom about global warming and that the globe is warming due to human activity. I mean, there are many scientists, climatologists, and others. What I'm afraid of is the fact that so much of this, we are seeing scientists that are being data-driven and influenced by media, of which many of them are catering their research to conform with media coverage. And that gets them the limelight, that gets them grants. We have to look at this at a balanced review and not a knee-jerk reaction. Remember, as recently as 25 years ago, the feeling was that we were heading toward the next ice age, and suddenly now we feel that everything is heading in the opposite direction. The Earth has ebbs and flows, ups and downs, and we know that climate change is something that we haven't even been around here long enough on this Earth to totally understand the various reasons why the Earth's climate has changed so many times over the biennium.
Yeah. Senator Miller?
Well, and we will continue to, as we evolve these hearings, seek out the widest possible scientific information, and I would certainly welcome Senator Kedsey's recommendations as to who we should invite.
Yeah, well, let's. We have lots of callers who want to talk with both of you about this, but let me ask both of you to react to Governor Doyle's appointment of this global warming task force last week. A good move, Senator Miller?
Oh, absolutely. This will be, I think, run very much hand in glove with the activities that the Environment and Natural Resources Committee will be undertaking to both inform ourselves and the legislature as to global warming and what public policies we should undertake to reduce the impacts it's going to have not only in our state but on the global climate. And I think the governor's task force is also designed to do the very same thing. And a task force is able to bring in a variety of experts to be able to focus on one particular issue.
Mm-hmm. And Senator Kedsey?
Well, I have to say that I'm glad to see that there's a balance of individuals on the committee. But we should undertake measures to burn fossil fuels more efficiently and reduce energy consumption through conservation. We need to be careful of creating statewide and costly mandates based on unsound science, perhaps sometimes no science at all, and we have to be careful that we may be pushing certain types of emitters out of state into locations where they may produce even more carbon emissions by pushing them out of Wisconsin under this type of legislation.
We're going to check our weather forecast and then continue talking with and take your calls with questions for Mark Miller, Democratic State Senator from Madison, who chairs the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, and Neil Kedsey, Republican State Senator from Elkhorn, member of the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. The committee is going to be hearing from a series of experts on climate change and global warming. There will be the first in a series of these hearings tomorrow at the state capitol. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, about 14 minutes before 8 o'clock. Stay tuned. Coming up after 8 o'clock, I'm going to be welcoming in Benjamin Barber, who's a political scientist and author of Consumed. That's coming up after 8. We're talking with Mark Miller and Neil Kedsey, state senators who are on the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, talking about the efforts that this committee is taking when it comes to global warming and public policy issues related to climate change. Before we go to the phones, let me ask you, Senator Miller, your op-ed piece or your guest column in the Wisconsin State Journal yesterday is advocating that Wisconsin should take a lead effort, should become a leader in helping to stop global climate change. What can Wisconsin do to be a leader in this?
Well, we can take action to make sure that as we address the energy needs of the state, that we do so in a way that does not add to the global warming gases that are emitted. That's one of the ways. And it's important that we do become a leader for two reasons. One of them is Wisconsin has traditionally been a leader in a number of policy areas. And the second one is that the federal government will, in the very near future, I believe, come down with a national standard. And the sooner that a state gets started on addressing and planning for a future that has reduced greenhouse gas emissions, the better off we'll be.
Mm-hmm. The state can reduce greenhouse gas emissions, Senator Kedzie?
Well, you know, I think we ought to continue to look at ways that we can conserve, and as I said earlier, to burn fossil fuels more efficiently. As a matter of fact, it should be noted that over the last 10 years, Wisconsin has taken steps to reduce their emissions and toxins, including mercury emissions, and we regulate three times as many air toxins than what the U.S. federal EPA says we should be. This is an international in scope. I mean, what we do is a grain of sand on the beach. When you look at what China is doing with one new coal plant per week coming online, India, Asia, other developing countries that don't have any types of standards to speak of, or very low standards, they are the major problem here. Wisconsin, sometimes it's just like spitting into the wind. You have to look at the big problem, and it's international in scope, not just Wisconsin, and we are probably one of the cleanest states that we have here in the United States. Our standards have continually been higher than most states.
Now, let me go to the phones. Mike in Madison is our first caller. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
I just have a comment. I think the task force for global warming is a good idea, but let's not use it as an excuse for not doing anything now in the present. I think what it has the potential to do is it gives the opportunity for those who don't want to take any action right now to deceive the public into thinking that this is not a problem. This is a well-recognized problem, and there are a lot of things we could be doing right now in state government. For example, more money for mass transit, less things for travel, like plane trips for the university and missions to China and all this kind of thing. This all this burns fuel.
Yeah. How about Senator Kedzie, a reaction to that?
Well, actually, we did, and I applaud the caller. He's correct. I mean, we do need to continue to do things on a daily basis and on an annual basis and not just sit back and watch from the sidelines. We did pass the most comprehensive energy revision package that the state has seen in the last few decades in the last session of the legislature in the Senate, and in that we have goals and percentages that the state must use in their new building, 10% goals of renewable energies being used. We have taken and are continuing to take steps in that right direction. And, just want our callers to know that the legislature has not been sitting idle. We have been addressing this before it becomes an issue.
Mm-hmm. Senator Miller?
Yeah, and Senator Kedzie was a key contributor towards that legislation. I applaud him for that, and we can build on that, and we need to build on that. But I'd like to respond to this idea that just one state or one individual doesn't make much difference. One household doesn't make a lot of difference, but when you have hundreds of thousands of households conserving energy, then you make a big difference. One state may not make a big difference, but when you have all the states working toward it, then you make a big difference. One nation may not make a big difference, but when you have all the nations working together, then you have make a big difference. And so this kind of impact on climate change requires the efforts of individuals, of local and state government, of national governments, and of the world community. And the Midwest has contributed and increased its share of greenhouse gases more so than the rest of than the average of the rest of the country. So I think we have a special responsibility to bring our emissions down to at least the level of what the other states are doing in terms of the increase. Wisconsin is doing reasonably well, but we do have a responsibility, and I think that the task force and the activities of the legislature with the committee hearings are going to help lead us toward those to making sound decisions in that respect.
Let me bring in another caller, Scott in Green Bay. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Good morning. I'm glad there are going to be differing views on this because, unfortunately for Senator Miller, it isn't a slam dunk that there is a divergence of opinion. And I know he said there are no scientists, reputable scientists, that disagree with this. But I read a great article in the Canadian Free Press, and I'd like to throw out some names. Professor Bob Carter, Marine Geophysical Laboratory at James Cook University, Tim Patterson, Carleton University, paleoclimatologist. Dr. Dick Morgan, World Meteorological Organization, University of Exeter, UK. I could name probably half a dozen more reputable scientists that have nothing to do with big oil. I know people like to say they must be for big oil, but there is no consensus here. There are a plethora of extremely bright, brilliant, reputable scientists that say this, in fact, just isn't true. And I'm wondering why I can cite all these great scientists, and nobody gives me a real good reason as to why there's a differing of opinion. They'll try and deflect it to something else. But they'll never give a real good answer to the question.
Well, Scott, let me give you the answer that, 98% of the scientists say that human activity is contributing to global warming, and you're citing some of the 2%.
That's not true. No, it's not 98%. I mean, I had a guest on that had a list of about 1,500 in a great book saying that it's just a cyclical event. I can't remember the guest. I think you may have had him on.
Yeah, I had a guest on that said that. Yes,
it's not. It's that 98%. Nobody can point any fact to that. They like to throw that number out, but there's no basis for fact in that 98% number.
And I did just make that up. But
well,
Senator Miller,
Joy, this is Mark Miller, and if the caller would just email me those names, I'd be glad to review them and see if any of them would be willing to testify before our committee.
Yeah. I think Art in Little Chute is going to take the same tact here. Hi, Art.
Hi, good morning, Joy. Yeah, well, I can tell you that Scott from Green Bay is dead on. You can look at the list of Gore's scientists that he touts in the 2,500 whatever names. You're not going to find all that many climatologists on there. You may find social scientists, political scientists, and other people who are standing in line for grant money and handouts. And so if you're going to question one side's allegiance to Exxon, you should question the other side's allegiance to free government money. But here's just a key quote here, I think, from Vice President Gore's key contributors and advisors to this whole movement of his. The gentleman's name is Maurice Strong. He's a founder of the UN Eco Summit and the Undersecretary General of the UN. His statement is, his quote is, "Isn't the only hope for the planet that industrialized civilizations collapse? Isn't it our responsibility to bring it about?" If you look at the motivation behind this and the fact that there is little, there's no modeling that bears Gore's predictions out. The IPCC from the UN doesn't even agree with Gore's predictions. They're a little bit more reserved, but basically they're political scientists as well. And the fact, Joy, that there is so much information out there that you can get just by Googling something. It's that simple. And yet people who want to believe whatever they're hearing about global science or global warming just refuse to look anywhere else other than they just repeat what they repeat from the media, like you did earlier when you said, "Show me some people who aren't affiliated with Exxon." Give me a break.
I'm asking the question so that can be addressed. Art, thank you very much for calling. We only have a couple of minutes left. I'm going to ask Senator Kedzie to react to your comments, but also that this IPCC panel says that the debate is over when it comes to this question, Senator Kedzie, that human activity is contributing to global warming.
Well, I think that, obviously, anybody and everything, there are ways you could hinge affiliation to contributions to global warming. I mean, you can't debate that no one's going to say that to emit greenhouse gases into the air is a good thing. We all have to be responsible, and I think we all have to take steps in the right direction. It's going to take a national effort, I think, as Senator Miller mentioned, a national standard. It's going to take international cooperation, but we also have to be cognizant of the fact that we have other scientists out there, von Storck from Germany, Allegre from France, and others who will dispute this and say that there are far more important things we should be addressing that are affecting global climate change. And Scott and Art are just showing that there are other points of view on this issue, and what we want to do is make sure that when we put together public policy and we're having hearings, that we're doing it for the right reasons and doing it with good, sound science.
Yeah. Ernie and Hayward, go ahead. We're almost out of time.
Why not unshackle the free market? Why not increase taxes on fossil fuel in name of efficiency and renewables? And why not decrease taxes on labor and profit in the name of the economy?
Well, let's talk about increasing fossil fuel taxes. Senator Miller, is that something that should be done?
Well, that is one of the tools that could be used to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, because fossil fuels are the primary contributor to greenhouse gas emissions, and that's been proposed. It has met with an awful lot of opposition, so it may not be, we may not have the political will to do it, but I certainly think it is a viable consideration.
Yeah, 30 seconds, Senator Kedzie.
Now, we have to be careful that we don't break our economy here in this state to the point where people of modest means can't afford to put gas in their car to go to work, have troubles paying their fuel bills. We have to, if the economy suffers, the environment suffers equally.
Yeah, well, this will be a lively topic for you, I'm sure, if our callers are any indication. Thanks a lot for both of you for being with us.
Thank you very much for being on the show.
Yeah, Mark Miller is a Democratic state senator from Madison. He chairs the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. And Neil Kedzie, a Republican state senator from Elkhorn, member of the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. There will be an informational hearing before this committee, 10 o'clock tomorrow morning at the state capitol. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.